Good morning. How are we all this morning? Is this a great... Did you say real cold? A little cold. Okay, you got to know that this room tends to reflect what's going on outside. So on days when it's really cold, you can kind of figure, the electric hall is kind of probably going to be a little cold. And we don't have to worry about this term, but in days when it's really hot outside, you think, I'm going to sweat. So just a little heads up on that. Welcome to Biology 102. It's nice to see all of you here. I hope you all had a great break. I almost felt like it was another summer break. It was such a long break. That was probably the longest break we're ever going to have in your academic career because of the way the academic calendars work and so forth. And breaks will start to get shorter as time goes on. Anyway, I hope you all enjoyed it. And you're back and polished up and ready to go. So, here we are, Biology 102. Biology 102 is actually the second course in the three-course sequence that the biology department developed a little while ago to kind of introduce students to the various intricacies and beauties and so forth of the whole field of biology. But even with three terms that we take, if you take all three terms, we still can't introduce you to everything. There's just, biology is such a huge field anymore, but we do what we can. Last term, a lot of you were in the class last term, that's good. I'll talk about prerequisites in just a minute. But last term we spent our time talking about cells and what cells are composed of and what are the molecules that go into making them and how do those molecules work and all of that kind of stuff, DNA, information, all of those kinds of things. This term, we're moving away from cells. We'll be mentioning cells a lot because living organisms are composed of cells. They're built of cells, right? You can't get away from it. But we're going to be talking more about how those cells interact with each other in order to form a functioning multicellular organism. And so the name of the course, Organisms, that's where that comes from. And we're going to model this primarily on the human organism. So we're going to be looking at all sorts of things that we have going on inside our bodies and seeing how that all works. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. What does it take? What are the complexities that go into making a multicellular organism? So we'll be looking at that. Or as Israel's King David put it so many hundreds of years ago, how we're fearfully and wonderfully made. It always amazes me how we actually function. You think we're these little packets walking around that do so many things to keep life going and so forth within us. And it gets even more spectacular at the level of the cell, but that was last term, not this term. Those of you that decide to take the course next quarter, the Biology 103, we will keep moving on with that. We'll look at populations and see how populations grow and how they interact and how we can predictably transfer our traits on to the next generation, and we'll look at the environment and all sorts of things like that. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what the whole year sequence is all about. So, Biology 101 is a prerequisite for this course. Now, what that means to me is that I don't go around chasing people out of the course because they haven't taken Biology 101. What that does is it puts you on notice that I expect that the kind of information that we covered in Biology 101 relating to cells, that you have a background in that. Where you got that background isn't important, as long as you have a background in what cells are all about, because we will be I'll be referencing back to that quite a bit as we go through the term. As a prerequisite, I'm not going to go back and cover information that I covered last term. Okay, we're moving forward. I'm assuming that you've got that information. Now, does that mean that, oh my gosh, if you haven't taken Biology 101, you don't have a chance in the world of passing this class? It doesn't mean that at all. What it means is there may be times when you find that you need to go back and review some things. That, you know, I'm talking about something, I'm maybe referring back to 101, a lot of people are saying, oh yeah, I understand that, and you're sitting there thinking, huh, where did that come from? You may need to go back and earlier chapters in the book. The textbook for this class is the same book that we used last term. It's the same book that we'll use next term also. So you can go back and you can look at things, review things if you need to review them, and so forth. you can be very successful in this class. Not having taken Biology 101, but it's probably going to take a little bit more work on your part, a little more commitment to do that, because you may not have had the prerequisite. Okay, so you that said, you were allowed to register into the class even if you didn't have 101 on your transcript, and that's just a warning for you. I will not go on a witch hunt and try to find people that don't have the class and say adios, amigos. Okay, so, but that is a prerequisite. I want to talk with you quickly about some specific course information. So you should all have the blue sheet. That's the class syllabus. And when you picked up the blue sheet, hopefully you picked up this sheet with the big eyeball, and you also picked up one of the index cards, because we're going to be working with all three of those today. If you don't have, only eyeballs over here. If you don't have those three things, then this is probably a good time to sneak down. Nobody will look. We won't know. Oh, I see you. make sure you've got all of those things. Okay, so come on down and pick those up. I'd like to start, just quickly go through the syllabus with you by starting on the second page. It always seems like the class schedule should be in the first page, but there's other information I want to talk with you on the second page. So let's start there, and we'll work our way around back around to the first page and other pages. So you have contact information here for me. My office is Science 163, which you keep going down to this the west end of the building, and you turn left and go down. In fact, our lab room is down there. The lab that you're going to be going to, Science 164, sits right next to my office. So if you keep walking down that hall straight down and walk into the first open door in front of you, that's the lab room, and my office is just to the left of that, Science 163. I've listed my office hours here, so I'd encourage you to make use of those. Please feel free to stop by. I spend an inordinate number of hours in the office because of other commitments that I have and so forth. So if you are walking by and you have a question or something and it's not my office hour, don't feel like you can't pop your head in. You can pop your head in. And unless I'm really enmeshed in something that I can't break my concentration on, we can probably talk then, or at least we can make an appointment for some other time. So please feel free to stop by the office and talk with me about questions that you might have or concerns or whatever you might like to talk about. I've given you my phone numbers here. So you got my office, you got my home. Fine to call me at home as long as you try not to do it after 9 o'clock in the evening. Should there be an occasion for faxing me something, you've got the fax number here. I've got to warn you that fax machine brings in faxes for about 50 different faculty members. And so when you fax something to that number, you need to be sure and put my name in bold print across it or something so that the secretaries will know who that goes to. So make sure that you do that. But certainly there may be times when you may need to do that. My email address here, very important. We'll talk about these in a minute. We're going to have a number of out-of-class assignments that you're going to be doing. And really the most convenient way to turn those in is by email. So I would just warn you, when you're writing me an email, the system, your system may autocomplete, and if it does, make sure it's autocompleting my address and not somebody else's, or you may have different choices. Make sure you get the right choice. I know there was a time when the autocompletion was just killing me, and I didn't realize it. I kept sending emails to this person, and finally I got an email back saying, "Are you sure you want me to be sending me these emails?" And it looks like, oh no, it was right name, wrong person. So you've really got to be careful with that when you're doing it. Web information here. A lot of this stuff now, I've resisted using Moodle for a number of years because I tend to write my own web pages and stuff. But I have started migrating some of the stuff over on the Moodle. So if you go into the Biology 102 Moodle account, you'll find a lot of links that will take you to various web pages and so forth. So you can either go directly, so here are the web addresses to go directly, or you can access a lot of this stuff by going onto Moodle now. One of the pages that you're going to be really interested in, I think, is the one that I've identified here as course information, and there's a link from Moodle to that. On that page, you get links to different things, and one of the links that has a tremendous amount of information, what do I call it, lecture material index or something like that, where you can download PDF files that are reviews of each lecture. So for each lecture, I'll start off the next lecture by quickly reviewing what we've done in the previous lecture. I'll have an overhead transparency up there on the overhead projector, but those are all available as PDF downloads. You can download that and bring it to lecture if you want, or use it as a study guide. It'd be a real helpful study guide. Just be aware that the links for those aren't active until after the lecture's been given, so that I can know what exactly I need to put in that review sheet and then post it. I usually try to get those posted fairly quickly after the lecture, though sometimes I get distracted and then it's not so quickly. Another thing that you'll find on that particular webpage is links to audio files of the lecture. So I've gotten in the habit of taping, audio taping of all of my lectures. I've got a little recorder running right now, and that's another thing that I will post after the lecture, so that if you want to listen to the lecture again or parts of the lecture, you can. Those audio files are raw audio files. I don't go through and edit them or anything, so you can sometimes, you know, it's like, what's that blank space doing there? Well, I'm probably writing on the overhead or something, but those are available for you also. And also on that page, I've identified some YouTube videos that I think are helpful. And as I find more of those, I'll put more of them up. But you can then click on links to YouTube videos and see what those are all about, too. So a lot of different things that you can access really from the Moodle page now. And it will give you a lot of helpful information. The address, the web address for that page that I've been referring to, by the way, is here in the lecture reviews. So if you want to just go in directly and find it, you can go there. You can go to Moodle and get it. So I try to put a lot of information out there to help you in learning the material in the class. I know that we cover a lot of material. We really do. And I really encourage you to keep up with the class. Don't lag. In a 10-week quarter, there's just hardly any time to even sleep. I know that. And so you really need to work at keeping up with the class. Don't fall behind, because it's going to get really hard to get caught up. So I try to put information out there to help you to understand the material if you're having trouble. And you can always ask me, too. So let's talk about grading for a minute. Those of you that have been in my class before have heard this before. But a lot of you haven't. So the class is graded on an 800-point scale. You can earn as many as 800 points in the quarter. 600 of those points are going to come from lecture. 200 of those points are going to come from lab. Now, when you signed up for the class, you signed up for both the lecture and the lab. And I don't know if you noticed, but the lecture you were allotted 4 credits for, and the lab you were allotted 0 credits for. And people will sometimes say, well, how come I have to go to this lab when I'm not getting any credit for it? But really you are. What we've done is we've taken a 3-credit lecture course and a 1-credit lab course and combined them together to be 4 credits. You're only going to get 1 grade for the class, and that's going to be for Biology 102, but it includes the lab, and the lab contributes 25% of the points to your final grade. Lab is really important, not only from the aspect of being able to get in there and get your hands into things and do things, but collecting those points, because those points can be very, very helpful at the end of the term when I'm starting to add up all the points and come up with some sort of a number for each of you. Don't slack off in lab. Make sure that you get your homework assignments in on time, and make sure that you do them, because the biggest problem I see is when a student doesn't get their homework in. You know, they're not collecting those points in lab, and that really hurts at the end. So make sure you take that seriously. Labs are meeting starting today, by the way. So while we're talking about labs, be sure that you have your lab manual. They're available down in the bookstore. They look like this. They're blue with a little box on front. Make sure that is the lab manual. Yeah. Make sure that you've got your lab manual with you. We're actually, this first lab that we're going to be doing We're going to be looking at various kinds of tissues and seeing what these aggregations of cells look like. You're going to be doing a lot of sketching, and you're going to be turning in, as part of your homework assignment for this week in lab, you're going to be turning in several of the pages in this first lab. So make sure you have your lab manual with you. It would be really good if you could bring a pencil or two for your sketching, because it's a lot easier to correct errors in sketches, especially if you're using a pencil rather than a pen. But make sure you've got that and bring it to lab with you. Okay, so 600 points from lecture, 200 from lab. We'll explain in lab how you can earn those 200 points. By the way, if you're in a Tuesday lab, this afternoon, that's one of two labs that I'm teaching. If you're in a Wednesday lab, then Eric Hansen is teaching those two labs. Even though they come up under my name, it's a battle that we've lost on campus in terms of whose name we can put out there for owning a particular class. So if you're in the Wednesday labs, you've got Erica. If you're in the Tuesday labs, you've got me. And we'll explain everything about lab grading there. Let's talk about the 600 points. That's always an interesting conversation. So we're going to have two midterm exams, and those are going to be worth 100 points apiece. We have one final exam, and that is a cumulative exam. Midterms are not cumulative. Midterms are just dealing with a block of information that we've had along the way. Final exam, though, goes back to the beginning of the term, so it is cumulative, and it's worth twice as many points. It tends to be about a twice as long exam. So that's 200 points. So 400 points, 400 to 800 points, are going to be from exams. The other 400 are coming from the lab and a series of in and out of class assignments that we're going to be doing. So I've got about half a dozen out of class assignments, and they're all posted in Moodle. You can see when they're all due and so forth. And then we'll be doing some in class things. So that'll count for another 100 of those points. And actually, the way I'm going to get those 100 points is by looking at the percent you get correct on all those. And that percent becomes the number out of 100 points. So we've got that. And then the other thing that I'm going to ask you to do is something that I tried for the first time last term. And it met with a certain degree of success. And reading the student evaluations from last term, a lot of people seem to like that opportunity. So we're going to try it again. And that's what I call a creative project. 100 points, creative project. This is your opportunity to take off with a creative way in looking at the material that we're covering. I got a whole wide range of things last time. Several songs that were recorded. There was a news program that some students did. They videoed. There were storybooks. There were posters. Just any number of things. You know, it's up to you. And let me talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes, because I got more information on the syllabus stuff. Okay, but that's your other 100 points. So that's all going to come together at the end, and I'm going to total that up, and we'll see how many points you get out of the 800. In terms of assigning the grade, I do not use a formal curve. A formal curve would say that I've already decided what percent of you are going to get what grade, and I don't do that. I don't use a grade based on the 800 points. You know, like you get, as long as you get 90% of 800 points, you get an A or something. Don't do that. What I do is take the top score in the class, whatever that is, 750, 760, it's hard to know. That's generally where it falls, somewhere in that range. I'll take that, and then I'll apply a percent to it. So as long as you've got at least 90% of the top score, you can be assured of getting an A in the class. I don't give A minuses, I only give A's. Something happened to the A minus a long time ago. It just kind of fell off my grade sheet. I couldn't find it. So as long as you get at least 90%, you're going to get an A. As long as you get at least 80% of that top score, you're going to get some sort of a B. As long as you get at least 65%, you'll get some sort of a C. As long as you get at least 50%, you'll avoid the F range. You'll get some sort of a D, and then below that is the F range. So that's how I do the whole thing. It gives you the opportunity. I mean, really, everybody in the class could get an A if everybody performed at that high level. A standard curve would say, you know, what is it, 15% of the people are going to get A's, and I don't care what else happens. With this kind of a system, as many people can get A's as fall into that range, and B's, C's, and so forth. So it does provide for you hopefully being able to do well, and I'm not assuming that there will be any number, set number of any kind of grade in the class. The class is available to be taken either for a letter grade or in the pass, no pass. And I don't know how aware some of you are of the pass, no pass system. In order to get a pass, you have to get at least a C minus in the class. Now, I don't know who's signed up for letter grade and who's signed up for pass, no pass. All I report to the registrar is letter grades. So that's what goes in. And then if you've made the distinction that you want to be graded pass, no pass, they'll make that conversion over there. And so, I mean, I can look back now and I can see from last term who got a pass and who got a no pass and those kinds of things. But I don't know it at the time. So be aware that you at least need a C minus. Now the other side of this, if you take the class for a letter grade, for a letter grade to count towards graduation, you need at least a D minus. You know, D minus is not going to look pretty on your transcript, but it would mean that you don't have to take the class over or some other class in its place, right? So a little bit of difference there. Letter grades down to a D minus will count towards graduation, but if you're pass, no pass, it's got to be a C minus. So if you feel pretty confident that you're going to do okay in the class, but you don't really want to worry about the absolute grade, you know, you might think about taking a pass, no pass, unless you're in a major that requires the letter grade. And you need to check psychology, maybe one of those majors. But you could consider that. Yeah. On the other hand, if you're just not quite sure how it's going to come out, and you feel yourself slipping into the D range, and you know you don't want to, you need to go forward, you know you don't want to take the class over or something, then you might consider the letter grade, because that will allow you to keep moving forward. And one thing you need to know about the pass no pass is that if you've chosen the pass no pass option, once the grades roll, once they become firmed up in the computer, and once you can go online and access your grades, you've got a 30-day window where you can go down to the enrollment center and you can say, you know, I really would like a letter grade instead of pass no pass. That's if you know. Let's say you get it. I had a person that got a pass in my class last term and got an A in the class. Now that person's a prime candidate for this to say, you know, I think I would really rather have the letter grade. And within a 30-day period, they will do that. They will change a pass, no pass to the letter grade. They won't go the other direction. You can't go down there and say, I got a C in the class and I'd really rather have a pass. No, they won't do that. But they'll go the other direction. So keep that in mind as you're thinking about choosing the option, and you can actually change that option up until the end of the 7th week of class. So by going down to the enrollment services and talking with them about it. So that is available, and it is a good option for some people. So I'll just throw that out there. In terms of texts for the class, down at the bottom, as I said earlier, we are using the same book we used last term. We're using the same book we've used for probably the last 2 years. We will be using it again next term. It's an expensive book. I apologize for that. We don't have a whole lot of control over cost of books, although there are some interesting options out there now for textbooks that didn't used to exist in terms of, you know, getting them, renting a book or getting a loose leaf version of the book or whatever. But of course, those are not returnable. The hardbound book is the only one that's returnable. If you've got a text from another class, or a friend, someone has willed you a textbook or something, if you've got the version, we're using the 9th edition of this book right now. If you've got the 8th edition or the 7th edition, I say use it. This information just doesn't change that fast. And the book publishers would like to think it does, and of course they have ways of making it look like it does. This information just doesn't change that fast. And so, and especially given the fact that most of your biggest source of information in this class is not going to be the text, it's going to be the lecture. And so I would say that if you've got a copy of an older version of that book or some other publisher's book, as long as it's a college level biology text is not terribly old. Use it. We do have some copies of this text on reserve in the library. So if there's ever a time when I say, you've really got to get in there, we're not going to be able to cover this, I need you to look at pages, whatever, in the text to get that information, you can go to the library and get that information. So don't feel like you have to buy the text if you have other sources for the text. However, let's talk about things you do have to buy. So the lab manual. We talked about the lab manual. You do need to have a lab manual, so make sure you get that and you've got it for the first lab. I stopped just short of saying you have to buy the lecture note packet, but it's one of the things that students always find very, very helpful in the class. So there's this packet that I call lecture notes for the class that you'll find down in the bookstore. It's basically an outline of the entire class. A lot of the figures and diagrams that I'm going to be using are in here. After each section of material that we cover, there are study questions or review questions in here that you can use to kind of pull that material together and use it for studying for your exams that might be coming up soon or something like that. So this has a lot of stuff in it. I've left room, I've tried to leave room so that you can keep all your notes in here too. So there's a lot of blank space in here as we go along. And that's why, but I'm never terribly successful in leaving enough room for everything. And so you get this, if I want to put it in a loose leaf binder and just bring a few extra sheets of paper in case you need to insert a page or something. The backs of the pages are all blank, so that's a place to write also. So anyway, this is available down at the bookstore as well as the lab manual is available. And I will be making reference to the lecture notes consistently as we go along this quarter. So, I want to encourage you to ask questions. Are there any questions? Yes?
Are the creative project presentations placed on such as their 5-minute limit?
The creative projects are not sort
of presentations. It's noted that you encourage me to leave.
Oh, yeah. Nobody volunteered last time. Everything came on CDs. And I was able to view them and actually play a couple of songs in the class. So, if somebody really wanted to do that, we'd have to figure out how to do that. Might be more than what I could. And it would certainly include a lot of power and energy. So, is there another question back here? Or would that just describe? No, put your hands in the air and ask someone's question.
Why don't I encourage you to ask questions?
I mean, as those of you that have been to my class before, you know that I can really get going talking and so forth. And so one way to kind of slow me down from time to time is to ask a question. If you need me to restate something, raise your hand and I will restate something or whatever. So if you're not asking questions, then of course, what's my assumption? It's perfectly crystal clear, right? Let's keep moving forward. So please feel free to ask questions. It's a bit daunting in a class this size, but believe me, everybody else will thank you, even though they haven't done it. They'll thank you for doing it, so please feel free to do that. Let's go to page one then, really quick, and take a look at what's going on there. So that's the lecture schedule. I hope to be approximately on that schedule, with maybe plus or minus one lecture or something. And I do plan on getting to the end of it. And covering everything that's on here. I've given you chapters in the ninth edition of the text, so those are the chapters that relate to those things. And I've listed on the side what laboratory we're doing, just kind of a terse little description of that. In lab, you'll get a more complete schedule for the lab, but really it's just starting at one end of the lab manual and working our way to the other end of the lab manual, so no surprises there. I would warn you, though, look down in the middle of the term, laboratory, pig dissection. We do spend some significant time doing some dissections in this class. The third lab will be dissecting pig hearts, fresh frozen pig hearts. The fifth and sixth labs will be dissecting fetal pigs. The preservatives they're using today are much, much better than the preservatives they used to use. So odor isn't such an issue anymore. But we will be doing that. The 7th lab, we will have a quiz on the pig dissection. And in the 10th lab, there's a demo dissection that goes on in the lab. So, and we have no alternative activities in the place of the labs. So if you have a concern about the dissection, if for some reason you really object to dissecting or something like that, you might rethink whether you want to take this class. I don't think that there are any classes on campus that absolutely require biology 102. I could be wrong, and you could tell me if there is. Yeah, question. This is not the full-blown cadaver itself. We do have a couple of cadavers in the building, but we don't need to know that. They only go up at night and walk around, so as long as you're not in the halls at night, you're okay. And you'll be doing the dissections in pairs. So if you're feeling a little bit squeamish, I would suggest when you get into the lab, find a lab partner that isn't feeling squeamish at all. And let that lab partner do most of the work. Though it's been my observation that typically, even the squeamish, once we get into the dissection a ways, they get beyond the squeamishness because of the interest in what's going on and stuff, and it becomes less and less of an issue. But be aware that we are doing those kinds of things in this class. Some important dates. Okay, so if you look up here, Friday the 11th, is the last day to add to add classes without an instructor signature. So you can, this week, you can still add classes without the instructor signature, but if next week you're going to need to get that signature if you're adding a class. Notice Thursday, the 31st of January, is our first midterm exam. And we'll talk more about that as it approaches. And Friday is the last day to drop a course without being responsible for a grade. So if you want a course to disappear from your transcript like it was never there, you need to do it by the end of the fourth week of class. Otherwise, it will always be there in one form or another. Reading down further, notice that on the 21st, Thursday the 21st February, is the second midterm exam. Again, we'll talk more about that as we get there. And that Friday is the last day to change your grading method. So that's your pass, no pass grading method. Actually, that's the end of the sixth week, isn't it? That's the last day to do that. So you can, you have that option. I mean, don't tell the registrar I said this, but you know, you could probably go down every week and change the grading method if you wanted, if you're sitting on the fence and not sure how you want it to be graded. But there is a deadline for doing that. Down at the bottom, where to go, Monday the 11th of March is the last day to withdraw from a course or from school, period. So if you've got a course that you're struggling with and you're wishing you had dropped it back at the end of the fourth week, but you didn't do that, you've got till the beginning of the 10th week, you can withdraw. Now, what that'll look like is it'll show the course listing on your transcript, but instead of a grade, you'll find a WD there, and that just means that you drew from the course. So that doesn't affect your your GPA or anything like that. It might pique someone's interest. It's looking at the transcript and saying, well, how come you withdrew, you know, but no big deal. If you wait until Tuesday, the 12th of March, though, and go down to do that, you'll be told that you can't do that. You are, at that point, locked into whatever grade you're getting in that class. So just a few dates to kind of keep in mind here. The final exam down here at the bottom is Thursday, the 21st of March at 10:30, and we'll be taking it right here in this room. So some important dates there. Any questions about the schedule? Well, let's go to the third page then, course policies. And you can read this. There are just a few high points that I want to catch here. So I've talked about class assignments, homework assignments, out-of-class assignments. And as it says here, they're available as PDF files posted to Moodle so that you can download those. Each one has a due date associated with it. They're all due on Fridays by 1:30 in the afternoon. Emailing, as I said, is the easiest. I don't use Moodle to turn them in. We don't use turnitin.com or anything like that to turn them in. So you just email them directly to me. Be sure that when you're emailing an assignment to me that you keep a copy in the sent folder. So I think if you're using the campus system, I think the Gmail system automatically gives you a sent folder where a copy of every email goes into. If you don't have something like that, if you're using another system, either make sure you create a sent folder or always copy a copy to yourself so you've got a copy of that assignment that you sent me. That's really important because sometimes something happens to those emails. And I'll have somebody come and say, I didn't see a grade for that assignment, and I know I sent it in. And so at that point I'll say, well, do you have a copy? Did you save a copy? And say, yes, I did. And I say, well, just forward it to me. And that's fine, because the emails, when you send them, are all date and time stamped. So I'll know that that person actually sent it in on time, regardless of where that email might have gone to. The biggest problem usually is getting my email address wrong. If you keep that copy, then if there's a problem and it doesn't show up in my inbox, we can kind of track that down and I can get you credit for it. If you don't have a copy, then the discussion is kind of over at that point. I can't give you credit for that assignment. So please make sure that you keep a copy of anything like that that you turn in, and keep that copy at least until the term is over. Important. Third paragraph, really important. So I don't mind if you get together and talk about assignments and things like that. I do mind when I get assignments that have obviously been copied and pasted. So when I find situations like that, I give everybody involved a zero. Be aware of that. Everybody, I don't try to figure out who did the copying, who did the original work or anything. Everybody gets a zero. And unfortunately, that it comes up every term, it seems, where I get assignments in that are obviously copied and pasted, and so I have to give them zero. So please, don't get into that. So if you get together with other people to talk about the assignments, please put the answers down in your own words. Don't use somebody else's words and say, oh, we did a great groupthink job, why rethink this? Well, that's because I'm going to be giving you a zero if you just do the groupthink thing. So be aware of that. In class, every so often I'll get you together in small groups in class. I'll throw out a question for you to think about. Maybe I'm getting you to think about what we're going to be talking about next, or maybe I'm checking up to see whether you've actually gotten the information down, whether you understand the information. Anyway, I'll ask you to get into groups of 3 to 5, and you can all count. You know how many 3 are and how many 5 are. I don't like groups of 2, and I don't like groups of 6. Groups of 1 really bother me because that's not a group. So I ask you to get in groups of 3 to 5 and to sit down and talk about the question, to write down your thoughts on the question, your answers, and for everybody to sign that sheet. Your signature has to be legible. If I can't read your signature, then I can't give you any points for that assignment. So if you have a signature that's questionable, then you should also print your name so that I can know. And that always happens too. I start collecting these sheets and I look and it's like, I can't even figure out who this person is. And so I just circle them and go my way, and we don't know who didn't get credit. So make sure that your assignments are legible. Writing, a little thing on writing. I do expect that you know how to write, your university students. I expect you know the difference between who's and who's and 2, 2, and 2. And little things like that, little subtle things which change the whole meaning of a sentence if you do it wrong, there and there. What are some of the bunch of them that people get wrong? So you'd be thinking about that, its and its. You know, when do you use its and when do you use its? When do you use along with the apostrophe versus when do you use them all without the apostrophe? So please take some care there. If any of you have English as a second language, we probably need to talk about that. Reading assignments, some more specific assignments from the text relating to within the chapter, within sections in the chapter. So I'm not going to ask you to read in detail every section and every chapter. And I've identified the ones that are going to be kind of pertinent to this class, even though the ones I'm leaving out I think are really interesting. They do a lot of comparative stuff that we're not going to do, like talking about the respiratory system. You know, how do fish exchange gases versus how do land animals exchange gases, and that, you know, real big differences there. But we're not going to be going into that kind of stuff. So just a little guide there. And then students with disabilities, please read that. And if you haven't been documented up to this point in time, you might think about that. I've already heard about a number of students in the class who are documented for disabilities. So you've got that. Okay, any questions about that before we go to page 4? Okay, page 4, class assignment number 1. This is the only time I'm going to give you a class assignment. The rest of the time, you're going to have to go to the Moodle page and download it. But I wanted you to have this one, and I've got some information on here. So this is due no later than 1:30 p.m. on Friday the 13th, and I was informed this morning that Friday the 13th doesn't exist this month. It's really Friday the 11th. So if you could make that change. When I was writing out my whole course lecture schedule and so forth, I had looked at the calendar wrong, and I had all the wrong dates on it. And I discovered that, and I went back. I thought I had corrected all the bad dates, but obviously I haven't. So that's Friday the 11th. You can send your assignments in earlier. You don't have to wait till Friday at 1:30 to push the send button. Okay, this is definitely being handed in by email. And my preference is that you put your email, or that put the answers in the body of the email rather than an attachment. The attachments take me a lot longer to deal with. So unless there's some overwhelming reason that you have to use an attachment, please put it in the body of the email. If you do it as an attachment, it needs to be either a Word file or an RTF file, a rich text format file. I get some emails occasionally, and I look and I think, where did that come from? And I can't even open them, and I have to go back to the person and say, I can't even open that email. So would you please, not the email, the attachment, so would you please resend it? So Word or RTF, those both work just fine, and I have no problem opening those. Okay, so the questions, so in the box is the actual assignment. Okay, it's just kind of an assignment to get you to looking at some of the things that are available, some of the materials that are available out there and so forth. So it's kind of like a little scavenger hunt in a way. And then some email advice down at the bottom. So it talks about the sent folder again, the email address, making sure it's right. Oh, the subject line. Subject line is really important, because I have my email set up that if you do your subject line correctly, not only will the email system put your email into a folder for me where I go to print them all out, but it will send you an auto reply confirming the fact that I received your email. So please do the subject line correctly. Now, to do the subject line correctly, you need these, just really this one element. So it'll be 102, number 1. It's just no spaces. But then that can't be touching anything else. So what I'm asking you to do, 102, number 1, that tells me it's assignment number 1, and then space, and then your name in the subject line. If you've got anything else touching it, like if you put by 102 or biology 102, generally it doesn't get picked up. You don't get an auto reply. It's very, very picky for that. It fools me sometimes what it will pick up and what it won't. But if you do the subject line that way, then you should get an auto reply. And if you haven't gotten an auto reply after a little bit, then you want to make sure that my email address that you sent it to me was correct, or things, or you can. You can contact me and I can let you know whether I got it or not. Okay, so that be that. First assignment due Friday, no later than 1:30. You can turn it in earlier. The next two pages talk about the creative project. And there are two opportunities, either for the first third of the class or for the second third of the class. So, and I've listed here the sorts of things that we're doing in the first third and the sorts of things that we're doing in the second third. So you can pick one of those two. You don't have to do both of them. You're going to do one or the other, a creative project.
and you can see a listing, like a collection of poems that are related to that material. I grade the creative project on three things, and they're down here at the bottom. Content is the most important. You know, how much content did you get in there that is related to the class? On the second page, creativity. You know, how creative were you really in doing this creative project? And then finally, execution. How well did you do it? Is it a sloppy mess, like some of them were last term, or is it really neat? I mean, there are different levels of this. So those are the three things that I look at when I grade these creative projects. So, like I said, a collection of poems. It could be a newsletter that has a lot of information. You know, there are some very clever things that came out. Marketing flyer and brochure. I got a restaurant menu that was really clever. Comic books, collections of cartoons, short stories. Got some really interesting short stories relating to material last term. Short videos, and on and on and on. So any number of things. You know, what interests you? What would you like to do? What's your major? How might you relate that to your major? Like the person that did the marketing flyer and brochure was a business major. And we talked, and I asked him, what's your major? And I said, well, why don't you do something like that? You know, it's kind of, that's where you're headed. And yet he had the biological content in there that was really good. Anyway, in the lab I've set out just a few of these creative projects from last term along with the grading that I gave them in the back of the room. So you can take a peek at that at some point. I don't know how long they're going to be back there, but you can take a peek at them and see, kind of get an idea of what I'm looking for here. So it's just an opportunity for you to creatively express the information that we're getting in the class. Phew. Okay. One last thing. Am I ever going to quit talking? I don't know. One last thing. Forgot what it was already. Lab attendance policy. Again, those of you that have been in class know that the biology department has an attendance policy for this class that basically states that any student who misses more than two labs without making them up will receive the letter grade of NC in the class, regardless of what you've earned. Please don't fall into that category. If you have to miss a lab for one reason or another, there are actually a total of eight labs that are meeting during the week. They're Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. If you have to miss your regularly scheduled lab, you can go to any one of those other labs to make it up. The only time you can make up a lab, though, is in one of those regularly scheduled labs, because Friday everything gets broken down and we start prepping for the next week. So you can make up a lab. If you do, please be sure and have that other lab instructor just write a little note on the homework assignment to your normal lab instructor telling them that you were there, that you made up that lab, so that they'll know, and then it will be just, you know, it won't be a problem. But for anybody that misses two or more without making them up, it becomes an NC. And it seems like every term I wind up having to get some NCs in the class, which I hate to do, because it's, you know, people put in a lot of work, and then all of a sudden, because of who knows what happened, that happens. So just be aware of the attendance policy. Okay? No more questions? Yes, in the way back, in the shadow.
Check those forms.
So, I have something for you to do now, since I've been doing all the talking. You can do some writing. So you all have an index card, right? I always like to find out a little bit about my students. So if you can pull that index card out. And on the front of the card, and I will let you decide which is the front and which is the back. On the front of the card, I would like you to print your name, sign your name. Let me know what your major is and what's your class standing. Are you a freshman, sophomore, whatever? And then on the back of the card, if you wouldn't mind answering these questions, why are you taking the class, what would you like to get out of the class, and on and on. So let's go ahead and do that. When you're done with that, if you could, you need a couple of these too. If you could bring it up front, and then we'll get back together again maybe about 11:30, something like that. So when we get done, if you can take a quick break, please. Okay, let's get started again. If you haven't yet given me your card, please make sure that I get it after class before we leave the room, okay, so that I've got that card. Wow, well, we got through all that other stuff, and now we can actually talk about biology a little bit, which is what I've been looking forward to talking about all morning, and we're there. Now, if you've got that lecture note packet already, I'm going to be starting on page one, just so that you know, and I will try to keep you apprised of what page we're on. So, page one is just kind of a review. We talked about this last term. This is what we call the levels of organization. How is life organized? And last term for Biology 101, we were kind of operating down at this level. Okay, so we talked a little bit about subatomic particles, and we put them together in atoms. We talked about various things in atoms and how atoms are connected together to form molecules. And we talked about how molecules go to form organelles. And organelles are small functional units within cells that do different things, like a chloroplast where photosynthesis happens, or a nucleus that contains the DNA, and on, or mitochondria where energy exchanges occur, energy reactions occur. And then we talked about, you know, how does it all fit together to form a cell? So that's what we did. Those are the kinds of things that I'm expecting you to have some knowledge of as we go forward in this class. This term, we're going to kind of pick up here, talk a little bit about cells, but not a lot. Again, assume that you've got a pretty good knowledge of that. The first lab kind of looks to review cells a little bit and so forth. And then we're going to kind of go up here. So this little bubble, this is the by 102 bubble. So we're going to talk a little bit about cells. We're going to talk about how cells become organized into tissues, tissues being groups of similar kinds of cells that have specific functions. We'll talk about how organs are formed from various tissues. So how do those tissues fit together? If you take and examine an organ on the microscopic level, you'll find all sorts of different tissues that are put together to form that organ. And we'll talk about organ systems. Really, we're going to spend probably most of our time right in here. What are the different organ systems that help an animal to be successful? And what are the organs that play into that? And how does that all work? But ultimately, we're talking about the individual, right? So we're talking about this is what makes these individuals to work. So that's where we're at this term. And then, for those of you that are in Bi 103, we'll kind of take this step up here and kind of pick up with the individual just from the standpoint of inheritance. How do we pass on our genetic information to the next generation? Why does that next generation look so similar? How can we predict what our offspring might look like based on what we know about the parents and stuff? We'll look at that. We'll look at populations, how populations grow. We'll think about communities, which are really assemblages of different species that interact with each other in a particular area, very different from what we think of in terms of human communities, where Ashland is a community and Medford's a community, and we just think about the people. To a biologist, communities have a much broader definition. It's like, okay, we got the humans there, but what else? We got all those deer that think they're pets that run around the streets of Ashland. We've got all sorts of things that are interact. How do they interact with each other? So we'll look at that, and probably won't get too high up into there, but that would be kind of the purview of Biology 103. Just to give you maybe a little more visual idea of what we're talking about here, just looking at some of the lower levels. So this would be the Biology 101 problem down here again, with atoms, molecules, organelles, and cells. This is the Biology 102 area right up here, taking that core sweep of the world part and looking at the various parts of her, digestive system, circulatory system, nervous system, and so forth. That's kind of where we're going to be hanging out this term. Over on page 2 in the lecture notes, it starts talking about how animals function. Okay, and what I call essential life processes. What are the essential things that animals have to do? And I'm focusing on animals because that's kind of what we're focusing on. Plants are right in there too, you know. For most of these, all organisms are kind of right in there, essential life processes. But focusing on animal vertebrates, focusing on people, right? What are some of these essential life processes? And I've used that term adaptation there. And that's a term that we'll use off and on in Biology 102. It's a term that we'll use even more in Biology 103 as we talk about adaptations and how do organisms become adapted to environments and stuff. Well, here we're just thinking about physical adaptation. Adaptation, just a simple definition of an adaptation, is that it's a structure or a behavior or a some way of functioning that makes an organism more successful in the environment that it's living in. So if you're a big cat, a big cat, and you're chasing down your food all the time, and you've got to kind of catch your food, one thing that would be a great adaptation would be to have a skeletal muscular system that would allow you to run really fast, right? Because you want to trap your prey. So we might talk about the muscular system and the skeletal system and how everything's hooked together and say, well, those are adaptations to run fast and spring and so forth. Having claws on the end, at least on the end of the front feet, if not both feet, might be really useful if you're catching your prey. How do you hang on to it? Well, claws would help to hang on to it. And some animals even had adaptations which were the huge canine teeth, you know, the saber-toothed tigers. You know, as an adaptation, maybe to help hang on to prey or something like that. So that's what I mean when I talk about adaptations. What are these things, what are these things that are helping these animals to be successful in the environments that they're living in? One of the interesting things about adaptations is that they may be very successful in one kind of environment and just terrible in another kind of an environment. So, for example, we're going to talk about the respiratory system. We're going to talk about lungs. Lungs are a great adaptation for animals that live on the land because we can draw air in, we can exhale air. That air that we're bringing in has oxygen. We need to get that oxygen in, so that's why we're bringing it in. We need to get rid of carbon dioxide that we've created as a result of metabolic activity in the cells, so that gives us the opportunity of exchanging those gases and so forth. And air is a pretty non-viscous, free-flowing material. So we can suck it in and we can blow it out and suck it in. It really works really well. Well, what if you lived underwater? Have any of you ever tried to breathe underwater? Probably not, because you're also here. Right? What happens if you breathe underwater? You drown, right? Well, how come lungs don't work well underwater? Well, water is very viscous to begin with. It's really hard to move water in and out in the quantity that we would need to move in and out. And not only that, water doesn't have near as much oxygen dissolved in it. So even if we could move that water in and out really rapidly, we'd probably still have a problem because we just don't have the oxygen that we need. So lungs, great adaptation for land-dwelling organisms. Water-dwelling organisms, gills, right? So just kind of almost like turn your lungs inside out, let the water run past, and that is a way for marine or aquatic organisms to exchange gases. So they're not always, the adaptations, the success of an adaptation, the value depends on where those animals happen to be living, what kind of environment that they're living in. Well, we're going to be talking about land animals, right? We're talking about ourselves and so forth. So these are some of the things, some of the essential life processes that we have to deal with. So obtaining materials and energy from the environment. We've got to be able to obtain materials and energy. We get that from our food, right? What do we do? One of the systems that we're going to be looking at that's involved in this, assuming you've already caught your food, you've got it available, would then be the digestive system. Because just because you have your food doesn't mean that you can utilize it. Right? You have to have some way of breaking that food down and making those nutrients available to the rest of the body. So digestive system. So we'll be looking at the digestive system. What are the different organs involved in the digestive system that makes this work? What does digestion look like when we talk about digesting our meal? What are we talking about? What's accomplishing that and so forth in order to make those nutrients available? So that's one problem that animals have. Exchanging gases with the environment. So we already talked a little bit about that. We'll look at the respiratory system. The respiratory system to see how do we get that oxygen in, how do we get rid of that carbon dioxide. And that's what we call gas exchange. Okay, so we'll take a look at the lungs and we'll see what's going on in the lungs. And then even more interesting, how do we then distribute that oxygen to the rest of the body and collect up? But that comes down here. Well, let's go down. Let's jump down to four really quick. Once we've got something in, how do we distribute it? Whether it's from the digestive system, whether we've taken nutrients in and we've absorbed those nutrients into the body, or it's the respiratory system, we've gotten that oxygen in. How do we distribute it? Well, we've got a convenient distribution system that we call the circulatory system. We can answer that. So we'll take a close look at the circulatory system. What are the parts of the circulatory system? How does that all work in order to distribute the material? For a multicellular organism, that's a critical system because we're so thick. Your cells really can't be very much removed from a source of nutrients, from a source of gas exchange and so forth. Generally, you figure a couple of cells removed and then processes start to slow down. It really gets slow. The circulatory system allows us to do that. Little single-celled organisms don't have that problem. A single cell, constantly surrounded by the external environment, they don't have a circulatory system. But multicellular organisms do, and that's really important. Well, what about getting rid of waste? You know, certainly, as we take things in, we generate waste on various levels, and we've got to get rid of those wastes. So one of the ways of getting rid of waste that we're going to look at involves, again, the digestive system. We certainly don't digest and absorb everything. So we'll talk about that. And, you know, we have a getting rid of waste function there. Materials that have come into the body that have been processed but not utilized or something like that. We also, as part of our daily lives, at metabolic activity, we create other wastes like nitrogen-containing wastes. And the digestive system isn't capable of dealing with those, nitrogen-containing wastes. We have another system that deals with those, and that's the urinary system. The urinary system, which is involved in filtering the blood. So these nitrogen-containing wastes, a lot of them convert in the liver, and they're circulating in the blood, and if we don't get rid of them, they're going to kill us. So we have the urinary system, the kidneys with that filtration function to help filter all that stuff out. And so we produce urine, which has a high concentration of urea, among other things, nitrogen-containing waste, a lot of other things in there. So things that get into the body and are circulating around, the urinary system is involved in helping to remove those kinds of things. And then there's actually a waste removal function that's associated with the skin. Because we find that even in perspiration, there are wastes that get removed with that. So there are different ways, strategies that we have of getting rid of these wastes that we generate as we do our daily things. Defending the body from biological attack, that's a biggie. There are things out there all over the place that would love to have you host them, maybe make a meal out of you. Now, we don't worry too much about the big cats, the animals, and so forth, right? We don't get eaten. We're kind of the top food chain at that point in general. But there are lots of other things out there. So it's like different kinds of fungi that they get in. They find the body just a great host for growing. And there's some really nasty diseases that are caused by fungi if they go wild and so forth. Bacteria, you know, we're constantly being confronted with bacteria. Viruses, constantly being confronted with viruses. So how do we protect ourselves from biological attack? And one of the ways, well, skin again comes into this. So we'll talk about the skin as kind of our first line of defense, coating us. But then once something gets in, we'll spend some time talking about the immune system. Immune system that's specifically designed to identify foreign invaders and to eliminate them, to get rid of them. Incredibly, incredibly complex system. Don't worry. I don't understand the complexities any more than you would. So we're going to look, we're going to kind of scrape the surface of the immune system and see what's going on there in order to protect us from biological attack. Physical attack, defending the body from physical attack. So a lot of organisms, especially aquatic organisms, have these problems. Freshwater fish is constantly taking water up by osmosis. Remember osmosis from last term. Because their tissues are saltier than the surrounding freshwater, so water's constantly moving in. It's got to get rid of that excess water. Marine fish have the opposite problem. They live in salt water, and so water's constantly going out of them. They have to deal with that. We have to deal with salt balance. We have to keep our salt balance proper also. And so coming back, the urinary system helps us with that also in terms of maintaining the right saltiness. We're constantly monitoring the saltiness of the blood, but it's really the osmotic pressure of the blood. If you remember that term, we're constantly monitoring that. We can affect how concentrated or dilute our urine is, that as that relates to how concentrated or dilute our blood is. And we can control then the osmotic pressure of the body by making a urine that's either more or less concentrated. We're either conserving water or we're getting rid of excess water. And you've all experienced that. You know, after you've eaten too much watermelon, and you know, about a half hour later, what are you doing? You're running to the bathroom. Or if you're a big beer drinker or something, you're just taking all this water and you got to get rid of it. Or if you eat something really salty, what do? You drink and you drink and you drink because you've increased the osmotic pressure of your body. Anyway, the urinary system would be involved there. We're going to talk about temperature also, maintaining a constant body temperature. We do that, right? And how do we do that? There's another process involved here. Well, it's actually down here, maintaining a constant environment. This we call homeostasis. And we'll be talking about homeostasis in the next lecture. But homeostasis is this process of maintaining a relatively constant internal environment, even though the environment around us is constantly changing. So how do we maintain a constant body temperature? And how do we maintain the appropriate osmotic pressure of the blood, you know, so that we can make either dilute or concentrated urine or things like that? I mean, that's the outcome of that. How do we maintain regular heartbeat? How do we maintain CO2 level? You know, all of these different things, this is the homeostasis is one concept that we're going to come across time after time after time in this class. This idea of maintaining this constant internal environment is really important. So temperature and salinity are all part of that. We need to coordinate our body activities. It wouldn't do to have an animal that just kind of flails and randomly moves and so forth. You need to have reason for doing what you're doing in order to be successful. So we'll look at a couple of different systems that are involved in doing this. One would be the nervous system, which is involved in coordinating our activities,
right? Involved in causing muscles to move in a coordinated way. It's involved in so many different things that go on in the body. So the nervous system is really important in doing that. And we're also going to be talking about hormones. So hormones, the hormonal systems, are very much involved in coordinating body activities also. These two systems do them from different perspectives. The hormones tend to be slower acting and longer acting. The nervous system tends to do things really quickly and so forth in terms of communicating with different parts of the body. But we'll kind of be peeking in on both of those and touching on them from time to time. And then finally, you can be the most successful animal in the world, but if you don't reproduce, you just die. What good is that? So reproducing, we have to deal with that. And the reproductive system. So we'll finish the term talking about the reproductive system. So that kind of gives you a little idea of where we're going to be headed this term. We're going to cover all of these different systems, though not necessarily in that order. We'll cover all of these different systems and see what's going on in order to make us successful. Now, as I indicate here, sort of towards the bottom of page 2, start talking about the building blocks of the organs. So all of these organ systems are composed of organs that are hooked together in certain ways that have certain functions. So what are the building blocks of organs? And I wanted to take just a few minutes, the last few minutes, to talk with you about this and kind of introduce you to some of the things you're going to be doing in lab this week also, because you're going to be looking at tissues in lab. So cells. Cells are certainly the basic building block of living organisms. Cells are the smallest unit that you can break a living organism down into and still have life. There is no life below the cell. So a multicellular organism like ourselves, we are composed of bazillions of cells. I'm not sure that bazillion is a good scientific term, but just, I don't know the number, it's just trillions upon trillions of cells that go into making up that human body, and all of them are coordinated in what they're doing, right? We see that the cells, though, just aren't randomly dispersed. We look at the cells in terms of tissues, where tissues are groups of cells, groups of similar cells, that perform specific functions. Okay, groups of similar cells that perform specific functions. And those, the tissues kind of form the building blocks for the organs. So if you want to know what's your toolkit, you're going to build some organs. What are you going to have in your toolkit? You're going to have tissues in your toolkit that are going to build those organs. In vertebrates, there are four basic tissue types that I've listed here. Just four basic tissue types. The epithelial tissues tend to line surfaces. Line surfaces, whether it's on the... Well, I just destroyed that. Whether it's on the inside or the outside or whatever, epithelial cells tend to line surfaces. And as such, they tend to... They're involved in protecting the body, both internally and externally. We often find cells amongst them that are involved in making secretions. They'll secrete things, various things... into the organs that they're mining and so forth, but that's basically it. And we'll see in lab especially that there are three different strategies, three different kinds of epithelial tissue that we might look at. Connective tissues are just kind of a grab bag of tissues. They're characterized by having living cells within a non-living matrix. And I'll show you some pictures of those in just a minute. Let me just give you an example or two, though. So one example of a connective tissue is blood. Okay, living cells, the red blood cells, the white blood cells, that are within a non-living matrix. The non-living matrix would be the blood plasma itself. We can separate those apart, right? And in fact, blood banks will do that. They'll separate the living cells from the plasma, and they'll use them for different things and so forth. So that would be an example where you've got a whole bunch of living cells within this non-living matrix. Second example would be bone. Bone is another example of connective tissue. But there you have many, many fewer living cells, very few living cells within a non-living matrix. So when you think of bone as being calcium, calcified deposits and so forth, well, the reason a bone can heal is because there are living cells in there. But in terms of quantity, they're few and far between compared to what we find in others. So those are kind of the two extremes of connective tissue, and we'll talk about some other kinds too, and you'll see some other kinds in the lab. Muscle tissue, one function for muscle tissue, shorten in length. And by shortening in length, they give us motion, they give us movement. And there are various ways that muscles get connected up to move skeletons or to move organs within the body and so forth. But muscles shorten in length. That's what they do. That's their job, to shorten in length, and that gives us movement. And then nervous tissue, primarily we think of in terms of the cells that are conducting nervous impulses, although there are other cells associated with them that help to support them. We think of them in terms of rapid conduction. Rapid conduction of information from one point in the body to another. So that nervous tissue is the fourth kind of tissue. Let me show you just a few slides here so that you can see what I'm talking about. A lot of these. So the first one here actually should look kind of familiar to some of you. That's a tissue that we looked at last time when we took the inside of our teeth. All right, that's epithelial tissue lining a surface. And this is one strategy. It's called squamous. You're not going to have to worry so much about some of these terms, but because they're just flat and kind of amorphous in shape. So we've got sheets of these kinds of cells that are lining the surfaces of our cheeks and other places. So that would be an example of an epithelial tissue. That's kind of what they look like when they're in place rather than when they're teased apart from the toothpick. You can kind of visualize that. There's another kind of epithelial tissue called cuboidal. And they're rather than being kind of flat and amorphous, they are looking for my pointer, not pointing. They are cuboidal in shape. That's why they call it cuboidal. Okay, so these little guys, so these are little tubules, little ducts somewhere in the body, possibly in the kidney or something. And these little cuboidal shaped cells are the epithelial. They're lining those interior surfaces and performing functions. And there's higher magnification. Okay, there's another kind of epithelial called columnar, which are really long and stretched out. And this is like the cross-section of the small intestine. And these surfaces, this is the inner part, that's where the poop would be. These surfaces are lined with these little long stretched out cells. And if we look at them in higher magnification, that's what they look like. Those are columnar epithelial cells there that are lining the interior surfaces. Really important in the gut because that's where your nutrients get absorbed to do those and stuff. And they do other things too. So different kinds of cells that line the surface. Here's connective tissue. Here are human blood cells. Okay, those are red blood cells. Those are white blood cells. Red blood cells are really, really tiny. When you look at the slides in the lab, you really have to be on high magnification and looking closely and see the red blood cells. But there's gazillions of them in the sample. Now here's another example. These are frog cells. These are frog red blood cells. Okay, you're going to be looking at the frog red blood cells also to see, hello, as a comparison between the two. This is bone. So I mentioned bone a minute ago, connective tissue that has a few living cells. All these little dark spots, those are where the living cells reside. And then the rest of this is calcium. These little dark circles, that's where the blood flows. Blood comes in through those, but then things have to diffuse out. And that's why bone is so slow growing. Is because it just takes time to get the oxygen in and the CO2 out and the nutrients in. But that's bone, mostly calcium, a little bit of living cells. This is cartilage, another kind of connective tissue where you have kind of an elastic matrix along there. These are all the living cells again. So kind of similar to bone, but more elastic. Another kind of, these are fat cells. Fat cells are connective tissue also. And they look like just great big empty cells, but that's because they're filled with fat. Okay, the stains that we use won't stain the fat. They'll stain the cell membranes, they'll stain the nucleus, those are nuclei, but they won't stain the fat. So they look like big empty cells, and they're really not. Muscle. There's one kind, it's called circular, that goes around, and when it contracts, it makes an organ smaller in diameter. There's another kind called longitudinal that runs the length. When they contract, they make the organ much bigger in diameter. So you get those two working against each other, and you can move through food through your gut. So you'll have the opportunity to look at some of these guys. That's skeletal muscle, like with your arms and so forth, right? Typified by these lines that are called striations. You're going to watch for these little guys. These are red blood cells. A good blood supply is skeletal muscle. Red blood cells look kind of boxy, and then these are nuclei up here. They look kind of like much larger oval structures. So that's what gives us our ability to move. And then finally, nervous cells. These are a couple of nerve cells that are going to conduct information. The information is coming in and going out these long processes. You just can't look at a cell like this. You don't know which ones are bringing information in and which ones are taking information out. So anyway, you had the opportunity to look at all these things in lab this week, so pay careful attention to them. And next time when we get together, I want to start talking with you about how we build these into organs and stuff. Okay, so I'll see you all on Thursday.